50 Years in the Church of Rome, Chapter 35. By the great mercy of God, the parish of Beauport, which at first had appeared to me as a bottomless abyss in which I was to perish, had been changed for me into an earthly paradise. There was only one desire in my heart, that I never should be removed from it. Suddenly, the carriage of the Bishop of Quebec came to the door of the parsonage. The sub-secretary directed his steps toward the garden where I was and handed me the following letter from the Right Reverend Turgeon, Coadjutor of Quebec. My dear Monsieur Chiniquy, His Lordship Bishop Signy and I wish to confer with you on a most important matter. We have sent our carriage to bring you to Quebec. Please come without the least delay. Truly yours, Flav Turgon. 1 hour after I was with the two bishops, my Lord Signy said, Monsignor Turgon will tell you why we have sent for you in such haste. Monsignor Chiniquy, said Bishop Turgon, is not Kamaraska your birthplace?
Yes, my lord.
Do you like that place, and do you interest yourself much in its welfare?
Of course, my lord. The most happy hours of my youth were spent there.
You know, rejoined the bishop, that Reverend Mons Baron has been too infirm these last years to superintend the spiritual interest of that important place. Hundreds of the best families of Quebec and Montreal resort there every summer. Drunkenness, luxury, and immoralities of the most degrading kind are eating up the very life of Kamaraska today. These words passed through my soul as a two-edged sword. My lord, I hope it is not your intention to remove me from my dear parish of Beauport.
No, Monsignor Chiniquy, we will not use our authority to break the sacred and sweet ties which unite you to the parish of Beauport, but we will put before your conscience the reasons we wish you at the head of that great important parish. For more than an hour, the two bishops made strong appeals to my charity for the multitudes who were sunk into the abyss of drunkenness and every vice, and had no one to save them. Bishop Signy added, Will not a double crown be placed upon your forehead by your bishops, your country, and your God, if you consent to be the instrument of the mercies of God towards the people of your birthplace and the surrounding country? Can you rest and live in peace now in Beauport, when you hear day and night the voice of the multitudes who cry, Come to our help, we are perishing? What will you answer to God at the last day, when he will show you the thousands of precious souls lost at Kamaraska because you refused to go to their rescue? Their paternal friendly appeals had more power over me than orders. I consented to go, well aware of the endless troubles and warfare I would have to face. The people of Beauport did all in their power to induce the bishops to let me remain among them some time longer, but the sacrifice had to be made. I gave my farewell address in the midst of indescribable cries, sobs, and tears, and on the 17th of September I departed for Kamaraska. When I took leave of the Bishop of Quebec, they showed me a letter just received by them from Mons Senior Baron, filled with the most bitter expressions of indignation on account of the choice of such a fanatic and firebrand as Chiniquy for a place as well known for its peaceful habits and harmony among all classes. The last words of the letter were as follows: The clergy and people of Kamaraska and vicinity consider the appointment of Monsignor Chiniquy to this parish as an insult, and we hope and pray that your lordship may change your mind on the subject. In showing me the letter, my Lord Signy and Turgon said, We fear that you will have more trouble than we expected. with the old curate and his partisans, but we commend you to the grace of God and the protection of the Virgin Mary, remembering that our Savior has said, "Be of good cheer, I have overcome the world." John 16:33. I arrived at Kamaraska the 21st of September 1842, on one of the finest days of the year. My heart was filled with an unspeakable desolation, for all along the way the curates had told me that the people with their old pastor were unanimous in their opposition to my going there. I dismissed my driver, took my satchel in my hand, entered the church, and spent more than an hour in fervent prayers, or rather in cries and tears. I felt so heartsick that I needed that hour of rest and prayer. The tears I shed there relieved my burdened spirit. There is a marvelous power in the prayers and tears which come from the heart. I felt as a new man. I seemed to hear the trumpet of God calling me to the battlefield. My only business then was to go and fight, relying on Him alone for victory. I took my traveling bag, went out of the church, and walked slowly towards the parsonage. At my knocking, an angry voice called out, "Walk in." I entered, made a step toward the old and infirm curate. As I was about to salute him, he angrily said, "The people of Beauport have made great efforts to keep you in their midst, but the people of Kamaraska will make as great efforts to turn you out of this place." "Monseigneur le Cure," I answered calmly, "God knoweth that I never desired to leave Beauport for this place, but I think it is the great and merciful God who has brought me here by the hand, and I hope He will help me to overcome all opposition from whatever quarter it may come." He replied angrily, "Is it to insult me that you call me Monseigneur le Cure? I am no more the curate of Kamaraska. You are the curate now, Mr. Chenecky." "I beg your pardon, my dear Mr. Brown. You are still, I hope you remain all your life, the honored and beloved curate of Kamaraska. The respect and gratitude I owe you have caused me to refuse the tithes and honors which our bishop wanted to give me. But then, if I am curate, what are you?" replied the old priest with more calmness. "I am nothing but a simple soldier of Christ and a sower of the good seed of the gospel," I answered. "When I fight the common enemy in the plains, as Joshua did, you, like Moses, will stand on the top of the mountain, lift up your hands to heaven, send your prayers to the mercy seat, and we will gain the day. Then both will bless the God of our salvation for the victory." "Well, well, this is beautiful, grand and sublime," said the old priest with a voice filled with friendly emotions. "But where is your household furniture, your library?" "My household furniture," I answered, "is in this little bag, which I hold in my hand. I do not want any of my books as long as I have the pleasure and honor to be with the good Monseigneur Barron, who will allow me, I am sure of it, to ransack his splendid library and study his rare and learned books." "But what rooms do you wish to occupy?" rejoined the good old priest curate. "As the parsonage is yours and mine," I answered, "please tell me where you want me to sleep and rest. I will accept with gratitude. I do not want to bother you in any way. When I was young, a poor orphan in your parish, some 20 years ago, were you not a father to me? Please continue to look upon me as your own child, for I have always loved and considered you as a father, and I still do. You were my guide and advisor in my first steps in the way of God. Please continue to guide and advise me to the end of your life." I had not finished the last sentence when the old man burst into tears. threw himself into my arms, pressed me to his heart, and said, with a voice half suffocated by sobs, "Dear Mr. Chiniki, forgive me the evil things I have written and said about you. You are welcome in my parsonage, and I bless God to have sent me such a young friend who will help me to carry the burden of my old age." I then handed him the bishop's letter, which had confirmed all I had said about my mission of peace toward him. From that day to his death, which occurred 6 months after, I never had a more sincere friend than Mr. Barron. The principal opposition the people had to my coming was that I was the nephew of the Honorable Amiable Dayon, who had made a colossal fortune at their expense. The Reverend Mr. Barron, who was always in his debt, was forced by the circumstances to buy everything both for himself and the church from him, and had to pay without murmur the most exorbitant prices for everything. The very next day after my arrival, the beadle told me that the church needed a few yards of cotton to make some repairs, and asked me if he would not go as usual to Mr. Dion's store. I told him to go there first, ask the price of that article, and then go to the other stores, ordering him to buy at the cheapest one. 30 cents was asked at Mr. Dion's, and only 15 cents at Mr. St. Pierre's. Of course, he bought at the latter's store. The day was not over before this apparently insignificant fact was known all over the parish, and was taking the most extraordinary and unforeseen proportions. Farmers would meet with their neighbors and congratulate themselves that at last the taxes they had to pay the store were at an end. Many came to Mr. St-Pierre to hear from his own lips that their new curate had at once freed them from what they considered the long and ignominious bondage. For the rest of this week, this was the only subject of conversation. They congratulated themselves that they had, at last, a priest with such an independent and honest mind that he would not do them any injustice even to please a relative in whose house he had spent the years of his childhood. This simple act of fair play towards that people won over their affection. Only one little dark spot remained in their minds against me. They had been told that the only subject on which I could preach was rum, whiskey, and drunkenness. There was an immense crowd at church the next Sunday. My text was, "As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you," showing them how Jesus had proved that he was their friend. But their sentiments of piety and pleasure at what they had heard were nothing compared to their surprise when they saw that I preached nearly an hour without saying a word on whiskey, rum, or beer.